President Biden says his economic aid plan is crucial, and I forgot to bring my reading glasses.
Do you need to go get them?
No, I can't. They're at home.
Oh, right. I could. It would be a very short show if I didn't bring my reading glasses, because that would be the end of that. But the bill has had a bumpy ride in the Senate. I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon, and this is Up First, the non-sighted edition from NPR News.
Now I'm really going to tune in, Scott.
Oh, my. President Biden says his economic aid plan is crucial.
7 million kids don't have enough food. 13 million people are behind in their rent.
But the bill has had a bumpy ride in the Senate. I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon, and this is Up First from NPR News.
The $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package was held up by the objections of one Democratic senator. Before a compromise was reached, the Senate could vote to pass the plan soon.
Plus, this week, healthcare providers began to administer a third vaccine against COVID-19 authorized by the FDA. We'll tell you what you need to know about the protection the Johnson & Johnson vaccine can provide.
And in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo is in the political fight of his life.
Please stay with us. We've got the news you need to start your weekend.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo explains the importance of creating a safe space for therapy.
I can't tell you how many times I've had clients that say that expression, like, I've never told that to anybody. That's when I know I've made some kind of momentous move with this person. They feel safe enough to expose that part of themselves, and doing that together with somebody else can be very powerful.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/upfirst.
The Senate is expected to vote on President Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package after a bitterly partisan and lengthy process.
No Republicans are expected to support the bill. Democrats are using a process that avoids a Republican filibuster, and in the evenly divided chamber, Vice President Harris is expected to be needed to cast the tie-breaking vote.
NPR congressional correspondent Susan Davis joins us now. Good morning, Sue.
Hey there.
All right, what is the latest and when we can expect this very important vote?
Well, senators have been working literally through the night in something called a votorama, which, Lulu, I realize might sound more exciting than it actually is.
Sounds very exciting.
Yeah. It's essentially where senators are allowed to offer endless debates to a budget bill, and they can do that until they're exhausted. And by that, I mean they either run out of amendments to vote on, or senators agree they just don't want to vote anymore, and they agree to end debate. We don't know exactly when that's going to happen, but the loose target is that that vote is likely to happen later today.
Wow, so it's dependent on the senator's stamina. There was quite a bit of drama in the Senate yesterday where Democrats were sort of scrambling to make sure that they had the votes over unemployment benefits. And what happened, I think, shows, right, the slim majority the Democrats hold and the power of certain senators.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, Democrats went to the floor and they didn't have the votes. Wow. And that really rarely happens. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, he's a Democrat, wasn't entirely on board with the party's plan for these extended unemployment benefits. And he was threatening to vote with Republicans on a competing proposal. That derailed the entire process for about 12 hours yesterday until they finally came up with a deal to tweak unemployment benefits to shorten how long they're going to be available for by about a month. Now, Manchin, like a lot of Republicans, just says that the benefits were too generous, especially with the economy turning around and the mass availability of vaccines expected likely by early summer.
The Senate did make some significant changes to the version that the House passed. What were those?
I think most notably, they scrapped the House plan for a $15 federal minimum wage. Mm-hmm. It violated Senate budget rules, but also it just didn't have enough support among Democrats in the Senate to pass. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona were both against it. They also tightened the income limits for those $1,400 stimulus checks, and they'll start phasing out for folks making over $150,000 a year. They lowered the income threshold. The House bill was more generous. And they also made those extended unemployment benefits less generous. They reduced the benefit from an additional $400 a week to $300 a week, and they're going to expire now just after Labor Day instead of the end of September. I do want to note the White House has signed off on all these changes, so they don't have a problem with it. And again, I think it's always important to remind people that the broader contours of this bill is it's still $2 trillion nearly in very popular Democratic spending proposals. So it's also one of the largest standalone spending bills in history, and I think Democrats overall see this as a pretty big victory.
Those changes, though, do mean the House will have to vote again before this get sent over to the White House for Biden's signature. When will that happen?
It should happen next week. They want to get this done and send it to President Biden by March 14th, because that's when current extended unemployment benefits expire. It should be able to pass the House. Leaders there have been looped in on all these changes. They've been looped in with communications with the White House. But there is some frustration among House Democrats, especially progressive Democrats, that the benefits in this bill were basically cut down because of other Democrats. New Jersey Congresswoman Bonnie Coleman Watson said that she was, quote, disgusted by some of her Senate Democratic colleagues. She questioned whether she could support the reworked version of the bill. I think that's important because House Democrats have essentially no margin for error. They can only lose 3 votes on any party line vote and still have it passed. So there could be some more drama next week. Again, bottom line, from the Democrats I've talked to, no one thinks the party itself is going to derail major party legislation that's a top priority for the president. And also remember, this bill is hugely popular with the public in recent polling. It's not bipartisan in Congress, but it is to voters. And that's a message that Biden has been pressing to lawmakers.
That's NPR congressional correspondent Susan Davis. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Tens of thousands of doses of the coronavirus vaccine made by Johnson & Johnson started shipping out across the country this past week.
The drug becomes the third vaccine in the arsenal against COVID-19. And NPR's Maria Godoy joins us. Maria, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
We've been hearing a lot about this new vaccine from Johnson & Johnson. How does it differ from the ones made by Pfizer and Moderna?
Well, basically, they use different technology. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines both rely on something called mRNA to stimulate an immune response. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, on the other hand, is what's called a viral vector vaccine. It uses a cold virus that's been modified so it can't make you sick. And then that virus is now essentially just a delivery vehicle. And what it's delivering is the genetic blueprint for how to make that spike protein that's unique to the coronavirus.
We've seen those pictures of the coronavirus, those spikes that stick out of it.
Exactly. So your immune system is learning to target those spikes and fight them.
What differences might you and I and others notice getting our shots between the effects the vaccines have?
So the main thing you would notice is that with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you'd only need one shot instead of two to be fully vaccinated. So it's one and done. And another key difference is that the J&J vaccine doesn't require ultra-cold storage. It can be kept at regular refrigerator temperatures for up to 3 months. So that makes it a lot easier to transport and store.
What about side effects effects on people with underlying medical conditions?
You know, there's no major differences. All three vaccines have the same common side effects, things like soreness at the injection site, headaches, fever, fatigue. As for people with underlying medical conditions, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the J&J vaccine is safe to take as long as you don't have a history of severe allergic reactions to any of the vaccine's components. And, you know, that's true with the other two vaccines as well.
One concern that's been raised by a number of people is the studies that show that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines both seem to have significantly higher efficacy rates than the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Is that quite the case?
You know, experts say you can't really compare those efficacy numbers head to head because those were different trials conducted in different places at different times in the pandemic. Johnson & Johnson started trials of its vaccine later than Moderna and Pfizer did, and it conducted trials in South Africa and Brazil at a time when more contagious variants of the virus were already rampant in both countries. So we have really good evidence that the J&J vaccine is highly effective at preventing severe disease and hospitalization, even with these variants. And severe disease is what experts say we should really be focusing on. Here's Dr. Kirsten Bibbins-Domingo. She's an epidemiologist at the University of California, San Francisco.
When we look at the thing we probably care about most, making sure that we don't end up in the ICU or dying, the efficacy of the three vaccines is virtually identical.
Think of it this way. If the worst thing that happens is that you get a headache or fever, but you don't get sick enough to end up in the hospital, that's a huge win.
Going to put you on the spot, Maria. If you had a choice between Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, what would you choose?
I'm actually going to let Dr. Cassandra Pierre answer that. She's an infectious disease expert at Boston Medical Center.
I would choose any of the three because I know that they will work. They will protect me and my family.
She and other experts say the best vaccine is the one you're offered first because that's the one that's going to protect you soonest.
NPR's Maria Godoy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Lawmakers in New York voted yesterday to curb Governor Andrew Cuomo's power to issue new emergency orders during the pandemic.
But despite the scandals that beset the governor, the legislature allowed him to keep many of the sweeping powers that he already holds. NPR's Brian Mann has been following developments. Brian, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Scott.
Why did the lawmakers decide to rein in the governor's powers now after all the heavy lifting that he did several months ago?
Yeah, well, what lawmakers said, Scott, is that this reflects the changing nature of the pandemic, but it's clearly a major rebuke for Cuomo. You know, just a few weeks ago, he was riding high with great approval ratings. Polls showed most New Yorkers thinking he handled this crisis really well. But things have changed. His team now acknowledges withholding data on thousands of nursing home deaths linked to the coronavirus. In a statement yesterday, Cuomo's team said they were clear all along about the fact that they wanted to fact-check that information before making it public. But a lot of lawmakers, like Republican Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh, are accusing Cuomo of a cover-up.
They hid it. They covered it up. They went to great lengths to control the narrative for the governor.
And Cuomo's political troubles go further. They also include accusations from three women, including two who worked for him. They say he touched them inappropriately or made improper sexual advances. Cuomo denies wrongdoing, but the state attorney general is investigating.
That's a lot of political flack, personal flack, all at the same time. But still, the Democrats who control New York's legislature left most of Cuomo's emergency powers in place, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And Democrats made it clear leaving Cuomo with all these huge powers to manage the pandemic is not a ringing endorsement of his leadership. It reflects the fact that scientists and doctors believe scrapping these emergency orders on things like mask wearing and restaurant capacity, that could mean a lot more people getting sick. Here's Democratic Assemblyman Ken Zebrowski.
That could turn us into Texas. I heard earlier that the virus is over. Mr. Speaker, those people that will lose their lives today, the virus is not over.
In fact, more than 100 people are still dying every day in New York. But on the other side, a lot of Republicans, including Assemblyman Brian Mangtalo, argued yesterday that public health rules and all the pandemic authority held by Cuomo should just be scrapped right now. They say it's time for life and business to get back to normal. Mangtalo said these rules are taking away people's freedom.
When the people fear government, that's tyranny. And that's what we have going on in New York State right now.
So really, this part of the debate was less about Andrew Cuomo and more about how the pandemic should be managed going forward, kind of reflecting the debate we're seeing across the country.
With all the scandals that Governor Cuomo faces, what does yesterday's vote say about his political standing now?
You know, Cuomo is clearly back on his heels in a way we just haven't seen before. He's in his third term. He's been one of the most popular governors in the country. But even some Democrats yesterday, Scott, called for him to resign or be impeached. But so far, a majority of Democratic lawmakers appear to be sticking with him. Here's Assemblywoman Crystal Peoples-Stokes. She's the Democratic majority leader.
I know that people have issues with the governor, his personal conduct, things that he's been accused of doing. But when I listen to my constituencies, they're still not thinking that this governor has done a bad job.
So that's a huge come down from the kind of high praise Cuomo was used to from fellow Democrats just a few weeks ago. But it's a sign, along with yesterday's vote, that his political base seems to be holding up, at least for now.
NPR's Brian Mann in upstate New York, thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott.
And that's up first for Saturday, March 6, 2021. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro. Up First is back Monday with news to start your week. Follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And for more news, interviews, books, music, fun, you can find us on the radio.
Yeah, weekend edition, Saturday and Sunday mornings. Find your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
Want more news? Well, NPR has a podcast that is the perfect complement to the news you get every morning on Up First. It's called Consider This, a daily show that goes deep on a single story from the headlines with context, backstory, and analysis. It's not just information, it's what the news means. Consider This from NPR. Listen now.